This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Well, baseball games are 9 innings long. The seasons are 6 months long. There's a reason for both of those things, and we got a chance to see some of that last night as the Mariners needed all 9 of those innings, but they got it done in the 9th, scoring 2 in the Mitch Garver blast. I loved that baseball game last night. I really did enjoy it. Had a little bit of everything. The pitching, essentially historic, but it was insanely good. Bryce Miller striking out 10 guys and taking that no-no deep into the game against a lineup that is just as deep as could be. On the other side, Max Fried was excellent and dominating a Mariner lineup that, you know, at times can be dominated. And the defense played a huge role, and the managerial decisions mattered. There was failure in a big moment. It rips your heart out. It brings it right back. Just an awesome, awesome baseball game. And to see the two guys, the two new guys who've been struggling most, win it for your team in the 9th inning, yeah. I don't know what else you could ask for in a baseball game. That was awesome, man.
And it was a pretty good celebration. It was a pretty good, not even bat flip, but a bat relief. Like, oh my gosh, finally, all of this month has been such a struggle bus and so frustrating. And yet, man, that barrel could not have gotten that ball any better. It exploded off of his bat. He knew it. The crowd knew it. Everybody knew it. The Atlanta coach knew it immediately upon impact. Grabbed his
notes. And I unfortunately knew it before it happened, thanks to our friend Mr. Barnes in the other room.
What? I didn't even say anything.
You did too, you liar.
What?
So Brock and I were going back and forth about the game. One of us was feeling a little upset. The other one was doing okay. We were arguing a little bit and then Brock, in his infinite wisdom, said over the text, well, all you need now is a Polanco walk and a Garver home run and this thing will turn out great. Well, you got a hit instead of a walk. But other than that, Brock couldn't have called it any better. So Justin, at the game last night, as opposed to me and Brock, who were watching on what feels to be about a 30 to 45 second delay now on Fubo.
Maybe.
Justin just texted us a lot of ha-ha-ha-ha's, all caps, and a whole bunch of exclamation points at the end.
I try to give myself because I get it spoiled all the time,
too. You couldn't just wait?
I thought I'd waited long enough.
You can't wait long enough. I would tell you that at this point, as much as I do like the Fubo and some of the other ways of watching through the internet, the app system, it is so delayed from the actual time. It's delayed from cable and satellite.
Yeah.
So by the time, I would say we're 3 pitches behind.
I know, because it happens to Betsy all the time. We'll be watching a game, and she gets a push notification from the MLB app. It's
right.
Like, home run.
Yeah.
And we're like,
Yeah, see, I turn all that stuff off. I turn all that stuff off. I don't want any part of it.
It was just too good. The conversation you guys were just having.
And I'm glad you were laughing, because I don't think Mitch was. Mitch was just like, God, I mean, he just...
That was my first career walk-off in professional baseball, so walk-off home run. So that was pretty special for me, and in a time where things aren't going my way and I'm not feeling quite like myself, to be able to come through for the team in any way, shape, or form is like a huge W, so I was really happy for that.
That's pretty cool. And you do know that, right? These guys that are new to a team and new to a club and come into an organization that is fully mature, that is fully established, that has unbelievable pitching. And once again, Bryce on display, once again, adding to a historic run by these starters and the whole staff, Salk, that night after night after night, it's just giving you chance after chance. Yeah, and I think for Jorge and for him, knowing that, gosh, come on, like, let me do my part. Let me do my contribution. Let me pitch into this thing. And, that's going to help the old wins above replacement right there, because that was a win by those two guys right there when it mattered the most.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the game last night, and just a lot of the reasons I do love this sport.
Do you always enjoy pitching duels?
Yeah, I like a pitcher's duel.
You like a pitcher's duel more than a 10-8, 9-7?
I mean, both are fun in their own way, but I mean, a pitcher's duel, when it's that close and both guys are as filthy as they were last night. Yeah, and especially because they do it differently, right? Mm-hmm. Freed's not throwing gas. He's a lefty and kind of keeping you off balance. Bryce Miller's throwing 95 to 97 and elevating the fastball and, you know, a young pitcher kind of growing into his stuff as opposed to Freed, more of a veteran who's pitched in the World Series and done some things in this league. Yeah, I thought there were some really cool elements to watching those two teams go back and forth and watching, you know, the two pitchers match up like that. And while I understand some of the frustration for Mariner fans, because it is annoying not watching your team score 5, 6, 7 runs every game, there is an element of truth to what Bryce Miller said afterwards.
Yeah, it's cool. It's, you know, he's a great pitcher. He's been around for a while, so he knows what he's doing. But it's fun, but I have fun whenever we got the lead. But if we got the lead all game, we can't hit a walk-off. So it's funny the way it's a fun game.
And that is baseball. It tests your patience. And you can't have a walk-off excitement if you have a lead. It doesn't work that way. I loved watching Bryce last night. I like watching Cody Bolton and Austin Voth come in and clean things up in the eighth and ninth. And you don't win without that. I said it earlier. I really like this Bolton kid. And I see a lot of Justin Topa in what he does on the mound. Very similar style of pitcher. I liked what he did last night. I love that they tried to play some small ball. Didn't work. But you got a chance to see it, and that's a reminder that when you ask somebody to play small ball who's not asked to do it very often, it doesn't always go the way you want it to, right? Yep. And then it's easy to compare Polanco and Garver to Wong and Winker and some of the guys that have struggled before them, and they might end up there when it's all said and done. But both guys have been really successful for a while in this league, and I would say they've earned the right to work through some early struggles, especially because of the lousy weather that we've had here so far to start the year again. The Mariners may not deserve the benefit of your doubt. I understand that, but I think some of the players do. And then when you watch all of that put together with this pitching staff, which is just on the most absurd run we've ever seen, I think it's 20 runs the team has allowed in the last 12 games. What are we even talking about? They're out of control. So, yes, this game can be annoying. Yes, this game can test your patience. But I said it 5 minutes ago, and I'll say it again. Baseball games are 9 innings for a reason. Seasons are 6 months long for a reason. And if you've got the patience, sometimes you get rewarded with moments like this.
The stretch by Minter. Polanco a lead, and the lefties 3-2 on the way. Swing and a fly ball deep to left field. And this one is goodbye, baseball. A walk-off two-run home run for Mitch Garver. And the Mariners win it. They win it 2-1 over the Atlanta Braves. Garver with his fist in the air, rounding second, ready for the ovation. And greeting his teammates at home plate, a high five for Manny Ecta. Garver tosses his helmet, slams it down, being mobbed by his teammates. The Mariners with a walk-off win tonight over the Atlanta Braves.
It was as if for the month of April, he'd been wandering around the desert. Right? He had a home run. He had a double. But he had been waiting for his time. He'd been waiting to find that water. He'd been waiting to find it. And then he just gets drenched. Right? He gets bucket after bucket. He found his oasis. He found his water. And what just a cool. And for a guy that has just, you know, been there and done it, Salk, mm-hmm. to your point.
Yeah, he's World Series winner last year.
Yep, exactly.
A big part of it, too.
Yep, and he's had a 30 home run season, and he knows what it means to be a contributor and what it means to be a difference maker. And as frustrated as many may be with him, and you totally get it, he's more frustrated than any of us. And he's been grinding to just get that back, to get that timing, to get that rhythm, and to get an 89-mile-an-hour cement mixer at the top of the zone. Mm. Had to feel awfully, awfully good to park it out in left center.
I was mentioning earlier, it's a great at-bat in general. So really, like, I know that, you know, we don't always go deep into, like, singular at-bats here on the show, but kind of take yourself through it as he takes three pitches to get up 3-0 against a very good closer with a man on first, and then the guy throws a perfect fastball on the edge of the plate. Nothing you can do. And if he swings at that and he rolls over, okay. Now you maybe have a double play and they end up losing. Instead, he takes it. Okay, wasn't ball four, which I'm sure a lot of folks like me were hoping for. Then, a little slider, right once again, right on the outside corner. I mean, he couldn't have placed those two pitches any better going across the plate. And he sat on both of them, and good on him. That's what you got to do. A little chuckle, I think I saw after the second strike, and then boom, he crushes the next one.
The craziest thing is an inning before that, I was one of the roles that they had tasked me with in the control room was going and getting all of the, just in case, all the information on, all right, when was the last Braves no-hitter? Like, how many combines do they have? And all this information.
They don't have that many. That's what's crazy is the Braves with all of the pitchers they've had.
Total.
Yeah, because Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz, none of them ever threw a no-no during that time.
Last one was in 1994.
Isn't that crazy? Wow.
That is nuts. So I was just getting all this information to put it together so that if they needed it for Mariners Vision, they could put it on the big screen. The second we get it done, hit. Okay, that's all we had to do. We just had to go collect all the information.
Well, now you got an opportunity, and Justin and I were talking about it earlier. You go for the jugular today, right? You got to pitch another unbelievable pitching matchup tonight with Ronaldo Garcia, who's been phenomenal for Atlanta. Obviously, Luis Castillo goes tonight. Tomorrow is Sale against Hancock. So I'm going to guess if you're Scott Servais, you go all in to try to win the series tonight, right? And then tomorrow, kind of see what happens. But you're going to probably throw your leverage relievers. You're going to start everybody. Cal's going to probably start tonight. I mean, like, you're going to do whatever you can to try to win this series. And then, if you can beat the Braves 2 out of 3, you've really accomplished something.
Yep, that's how you keep in first place, Salky. That's how you keep adding and going games above 500. Just find ways to win series, right? Find ways to win series, and all of a sudden you're 2, 3, 5, 8 games above 500, and hopefully making a little distance with some of your buddies here in the West.
Good stuff. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back with everything you need to know, including a huge move made by a team maybe 2 years too late and maybe to save the bacon. We'll discuss next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
A pitcher's duel that ended in a spectacular fashion last night for the Mariners. It didn't look good as recently as what? The eighth inning? Loaded the bases, Brock, and couldn't get it done. Julio pops up. Then you get a strikeout. You're going, oh, geez. This thing's moving in the wrong direction. It didn't look good. But then a single from Jorge Polanco, and Mitch Garver walked it off.
The stretch by Minter. Polanco a lead, and the lefties 3-2 on the way. Swing and a fly ball deep to left field. And this one is goodbye, baseball. A walk-off two-run home run for Mitch Garver. And the Mariners win it. They win it 2-1.
What a night at T-Mobile. It was all about the pitching early. I mean, honestly, what you saw from Bryce Miller is just dominant. And again, against a lineup that you don't just dominate. That's just not how that's supposed to work.
No, Scott said this the other day. I forget about which absolute stud. Maybe it was Logan. Maybe it was George. I think it was actually George with all those fastballs. And you just wonder, like, man, if you're an Atlanta fan watching that game, it's late in Atlanta, right? And you're like, he's just throwing fastballs. Can you hit the fastball? It's like a 96 mile. Come on, boys, wake up. But you don't realize when you watch it on television how unique that, right? It looks like a rising fastball, right? We talk about this all the time. And Paston will be with us next hour. Just that arm slot and the way that ball comes out and the explosion at the top of the zone, they just can't catch it. Even the world's best lineup right there with the Dodgers are the Braves. And those guys just swing and miss and swing and miss. And, man, he was pounding the fastball through, what, 6 no-hit innings himself? Before a little grounder there by Acuna, unfortunately, broke his no-no.
Yeah, it was a heck of an outing, and afterwards, he didn't even get a chance to see the home run live.
Yeah, I was doing arm care, and I had to run out there, and I threw my phone across the locker room so I wouldn't have it, and ran out there, and everybody's fired up, so we had fun.
Poor guy. I hope his phone's okay.
Whoa, what did he say? Hold on a second. What did you say?
What?
To all you Gen Zers, see what he just did right there? He's a Gen Zer himself. He threw his phone so he could be present in the moment.
You think that's what it was about?
I think so.
I think it was so the phone didn't break.
Let me be present in this moment right here like they do at Augusta, and I'm going to throw my phone down so I can just be right there.
Interesting. I got the sense.
Talking in a southern accent.
It was more about, like, I want to protect the most important thing in my life, so I'm going to throw it away before I start this celebration. Anyway, heck of a game last night. To get back to it tonight, Luis Castillo gets the ball looking for a series win.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
I could have done this 2 years ago, and I've probably wanted this to happen for a while, but the Kraken are moving on from Coach Dave Haxtell. 3 seasons behind the bench. I think it was the right decision. The team did regress this year significantly. The young players, specifically Matty Beniers, took a step backwards rather than a step forwards. They played so poorly, looked like they'd quit in the second half of this season. So in those regards, I think they did the right thing. I'll give Haxtell some credit. He found ways to keep this team engaged last year when it looked like they might kind of fall off a cliff, and he does. He deserves credit for that. But this was the right move. The problem now is that you're going to have all eyes on your architect, your general manager, Ron Francis. Never made the playoffs when he was in Carolina, has one playoff season here, and immediately made moves that made the team worse in the offseason. This is going to be one very important hire for Mr. Francis.
Yeah, did you see the report in this? I think this has some validity based on the timing of it. Did you see the report that it was actually the veteran players that came to Ron Francis and said, if he's back, I'm out. Like, yeah. I'm not doing this again. We're not running him back for a fourth time. And it was actually, I think, a former great player himself and Ron Francis listening to his veteran voices saying, man, if the locker room, if he didn't have the locker room, and they played hard, so that never felt like a tremendous effort issue.
Right.
But it was just a group that never, certainly did not ascend after their playoff run.
And they didn't come together. I didn't think they were coached as well. I didn't think they played as well. And they've got some talent issues. They don't protect each other well because they don't really have anybody to do the protecting. And they don't have a tremendous talent to kind of rely on in big moments. So the job is now cut out for Ron Francis because now, for sure, I think all eyes are going to turn to him.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Good conversation with Brady Henderson yesterday regarding kind of where you're at now after the draft. Rookie minicamp starts next week. Seahawks eventually are going to have some roster decisions to make. We talked earlier about the defensive linemen, and Brady said, yeah, they could trade a Jaron Reed or whatever. We'll see. What about a cornerback? And I'll keep coming back to maybe some of the message sent specifically to Tariq Woolen and some of the other corners in that room. Like, hey, everyone we drafted was up front except for two cornerbacks. That's probably something to think about.
No, that's going to be a very, very competitive room. If a trade would have gone down, you would have thought maybe it would have been on draft day into that second and third round, Salk. If, you know, as Brady mentioned and I had talked about, there was only one D tackle, right, that went in that first round. And then obviously the undersized guy out of Illinois goes in the second, and a row goes, you know, just a few spots after him. I'd have thought maybe that happened around draft day. And then when you listen to Mike McDonald, I don't think that's going to. Jaron Reed at $4.5 million is better for you than traded anywhere else. And have a bunch of interchangeable parts that you can move week to week. And you know those guys get banged up.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't see that happening.
Uh-uh.
What seems much more likely to me, though, is that we do see some Draymond Jones playing the edge.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
Just kind of looking at where you have enough talent and where you don't. Like,
yeah, and in Blue 88, we'll get to today's the actual day that you can start signing some of these free agents. If you've wondered why Quandre and some of these other guys don't have jobs, it's because today now you can sign them without affecting your compensatory pick and ratio and formula and all that good stuff. So
there just seemed to be this one name that I could confirm
those reports yesterday, but I think the organization a little surprised why yesterday. It wasn't like all of a sudden the Seahawks talked to Jamal yesterday. They've kept that door open like they have Rashad Penny and like many of these guys that are on the streets right now.
All right, there you go. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. A name that we have discussed, I don't know how many hundreds of times, Brock, over the course of the last year or two, finds himself today in one of the strangest situations in all of sports. How did he get there and what does he do about it? That's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Michael Penix was the number 8 pick in this year's draft. He goes to Atlanta in a huge shock, a huge surprise. And it's surprising for a bunch of reasons, right? Who we went ahead of, who, you know, where he ended up going. But more than anything, just the spot in Atlanta after they had already spent so much money on Kirk Cousins, it really is a bizarre situation.
How do you get to that point? Is that such terrible mismanagement that you're sitting there, right? Because we know this, like a lot of us, and we're guilty of it. Not guilty, it's just our job. We're in this day, in this moment, in this month, right, doing these shows, building to this draft, mm-hmm. we don't look out to the following years. We don't see the bigger picture that these organizations have to do. I was telling you, Salk, the lead up to the draft, it was my understanding that in that war room or room adjacent, as they get ready, you know, their personnel departments put together the needs of all 31 other teams sure. very clearly, so they can start to have a blueprint of where this could go and what other teams need. And if you're the Atlanta Falcons, right, and you've come off Matt Ryan and you drafted Desmond Ridder, and, you know, he's not really the guy, and Mariota was just kind of a bridge, and then you go, okay, let's go bring Kirk back. Mm-hmm. You know, makes home in Georgia, perfect fit down here in so many different ways, veteran guy with all these good offensive pieces, and let's commit to him. Because we're not going to draft somebody. We have other needs. We have to rush the pass. We have to do all these other things in the draft. And then you go and sign Penix number 8?
It's so weird.
How does that disconnect? Or do they just say, I don't care. You're Jim Collins, good to great. I don't care how bad this looks. I don't care how much we're going to get killed and ripped. And you're going to hear a whole bunch of sound. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it may look like and appear to be. We're not going to let that transformational, generational talent out the door. And if we have a chance to get him at 8, kind of like when Brian Wu comes back, things will just work themselves out. At that position, we'll find a way to make those things work.
The problem they run into is they have it is still a salary cap system where you can only have you only get so many assets. And if you just a couple of months ago came to the conclusion that Kirk Cousins was so good, you wanted to give him this ludicrous contract, which I would not have given him, but okay, they decided to do it. You've got to then commit to that philosophy and give him whatever you can to let him succeed. Or you don't do it and you draft a quarterback knowing that you're picking in the top 8.
Do you think San Francisco kind of screwed all these guys? You think what happened there when they draft Trey Lance? You got to give Trey Lance a chance. He's the number 3 pick in the draft. We just mortgaged the farm, man. We just gave away all these picks, and you know, this is our guy, and we've got to have Trey Lance. And we're going to pay him $25 million guaranteed, $30 million, whatever it is. Like, he's got to be our guy.
Who could they have drafted instead of Trey Lance?
That year?
Yeah. Were there defensive players, other offense, like non-quarterbacks they could have drafted that turned out to be pretty good?
Oh, I'm sure there were.
So what if they had done that? They haven't won a – just remind me, have they won a Super Bowl?
Been to 2.
Have they won one?
Been the 2.
But have they won one?
Mm-mm.
So they could be better than they've been. Can we agree?
Yes.
Would they be better if they hadn't drafted Trey Lance?
And traded picks? Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course they would have been. So I don't know. I I would say that's not enough.
I mean, you've seen RG3. RG3 went, what, number 2 in the draft? Mm-hmm. And they took Kirk Cousins in the 4th round. And we're like, hey, man.
That's adding a 4th round pick.
You can never have too much talent.
I thought that was a wise pick when they made it, because who knows whether a quarterback is going to bust. But Kirk Cousins is like 15 years into this career. Mm-hmm. You got a pretty good idea of what he is, who he is, and what he's going to do. And you didn't add to it a 4th round pick to make sure. You added a 1st round pick at number 8. Totally different situation. Dan Orlovsky here explaining why Atlanta did what they did.
Well, this laid out to me totally made sense. And then I started to think about that information. I was like, I actually like the decision. Number one, they had Michael Penix as the number 2 quarterback in the draft, top 4 player. He was neck and neck with Jaden Daniels for them. So they valued the player. Number 2, I mean, this is a team that won 7 games last year with pretty darn poor quarterback play. They think they're going to be pretty good with Kirk over the next couple of years. So they don't believe that when that time comes to go get that next guy, it's going to be as easy as even myself thinks it is to get up in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing was they went out for a private workout with Michael, and they said 50 degrees, windy day, and everyone thought they were inside watching him throw the football.
So that's Orlovsky with Rich Eisen, and mm-hmm. they just loved him. They fell in love with the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. But you also got married like a couple of months earlier.
That's right.
Like, it's cool that you maybe met the love of your life after you got married, but you just got married. You just got married and spent a ton of money on the wedding. Like, you didn't just commit to this person. You committed hard. You're like, yeah, I'm getting married. I'm spending $250K on the wedding. We're going on the biggest honeymoon of all time. I'm getting her pregnant day 1. Like, you are all 100% in, $160 million on stupid Kirk Cousins. Then you're like, I am kind of intrigued by this other person over here. Like, you can't do that.
Instead of doing something to compliment that ceremony, how about we just start
Also, by the way, you're the Atlanta Falcons. You're not Brad Pitt. I mean, like, let's tone it down. Like, who do you think you are?
By the way, when did that analogy hit? I didn't see that in the show notes last
time. That one just struck me right now. Because, Brock, the real victim here is actually not Kirk Cousins. Mm-mm. Kirk Cousins is going to be just fine. He got $160 million extra after all the money he's made in his life. Kirk Cousins is going to start somewhere sooner rather than later. But if I'm Michael Penix, this is terrible. This is a terrible situation. I know you said it was a good one. I disagree. I think this is a terrible situation for Penix, who can't. He's not the like 21-year-old who can sit and wait for a few years. He's one of the oldest quarterbacks in this draft. Joel Klatt, as usual, agrees with me.
If I was Michael Penix, I would be more furious than even Kirk Cousins. I waited all that time. I had all those injuries. I got myself to Washington, had these two amazing years. I'm an older guy. What's more valuable in the NFL, being drafted in the top 10 or getting a second contract? Getting a second contract. How does Michael Penix get on the field to prove himself ready for a second contract? Now, when's a second contract going to be? I just don't understand. And you also just don't win a championship when you have a mountain of dead cap space.
You know where this is going to be the most complicated and who the actual victim is? The locker room.
Because it's going to be split.
The locker room. Mm-hmm. Val Buen. The locker room is going to be a mess. Honestly, that's going to be where it's impacted the most.
I believe it.
You know, Kirk's going to have this Achilles. He's coming off. He's going to be very limited all offseason in these OTAs. You know what's going to happen. Penn's going to go throwing that ball and whipping that ball all around Flowery Branch and all these receivers and DB. Like, oh, my gosh, this is the dude. This is the dude right here. Right. And then, you know, some of the veteran guys are going to be like, take it down a notch. Some of the guys have got a lot of scars and been through a lot of stuff in the NFL who knows it's not about flash, that knows that experience is incredibly valuable. And Kirk is an unbelievably tough dude and a great leader and all those things. And, you know, you're going to have those guys saying, take it. I mean, it's just going to be a mess. And that is where, to me, the most unfortunate thing Penix walks
into. And you got,
into.
By the way, a rookie head coach and Raheem Morris, who hasn't done it in a while.
Correct. Correct. And Jimmy Lake, you know, D coordinator over there.
I'm sure that'll make it easy.
I'm sure he'll calm any waters. I'm sure he will make it really, really easy, whatever direction they go.
Nobody gets smacked or anything.
And I think a first time offensive coordinator in Zach Robinson as well. So
that's kind of a mess. So, all right, what do you do if you are Michael Penix? More from Joel Klatt.
If I was Michael Penix, I don't know how quickly I would sign. I don't know how much he can force his issue, but what? I want to play. What do you mean you like? Great, good. I'm glad. I'm so thankful. I'm in the top 10 now. What in the world?
What do you do?
So you don't show. You don't. You don't go to OTAs. You don't. You know. I guess the OTAs and all that. You kind of sign a waiver and protect yourself and everything else. But you don't go to training camp.
Maybe not.
To have the opportunity. I mean, that's going to be your opportunity. Kirk's going to be a slow roller, right? He's going to probably be very, very guarded, very protected, not play in the preseason at all, right? To just kind of try to get himself off that Achilles to full speed by week number one. This is, if you're panicked, like, this is my chance. You kidding me? This is, and I know it's not a great comp once again, because we've not seen anything of this hysteria. But, you know, I was listening to some national guys driving around down in Houston for my UFL game. They brought up the Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn.
Nope.
And by those dollars, it was $10 million then. I think it was like a three-year, $30 million deal with $10 million guaranteed. So that was 15 years ago. So call that today in today's dollars. I don't know, 3 years, $60 million and $30 million guaranteed or something close to that. And Seattle went. Pete went best man place.
Brock, this is $160 million. Come on.
Is that a difference?
Yeah. It is. Really? This is $160 million. And oh, by the way, Matt Flynn. Yeah, first of all, that's $160 million versus whatever you said, $10 million. It is a third round pick instead of the number 8 overall pick. Mm-hmm. And it's Matt Flynn, who had like two good starts in his life, compared to Kirk Cousins, who is a known commodity. He may have his issues, but you know what he is versus Matt Flynn, who is very much still an unknown upside potential guy.
They're
not even analogous.
When I share with you some of these behind the scenes stuff, and you're like, don't tell me that stuff. Don't tell me it happens like that. Don't tell me in 45 minutes that happened. Like, please don't. I want to believe there's a lot more forethought in all of it. Could it just be so simple that Atlanta watched the national title game And, you know, like watch Michael Penix kind of get beat up and look pretty normal and pretty human in that game, and thought, okay, here's this draft class. There's JJ. Caleb's going to go one. Jaden's going to go two, right? Maybe Drake. We're not going to be involved and invested. And that guy's too beat up anyway, and we're not going to do it. So let's sign Kirk, and Kirk's going to be our guy. And then all of a sudden they, like fans, just get emotionally attached. They have a private workout. And did that not sound like Mahomes with Andy Reid? Right, Mahomes decided in Lubbock to go throw in 50-mile-an-hour winds and be like, yeah, I'll go throw outside, right, and just get totally emotionally taken and enamored, right, and this GM or some of the other coaches or, you know, was this an owner that wanted Kirk and a GM that wanted this guy, and there's a little pot, like, you know, stuff like that happens behind the scenes.
I know.
And this just feels and reeks of utter dysfunction.
I know. I don't love it. Here's Ross Tucker talking through it.
Frankly, I think it's selfish. And this is coming from a former player's perspective. I think it's borderline disrespectful to guys like Jake Matthews at left tackle, Grady Jarrett, defensive tackle, even Kirk Cousins, who probably won't even still be on the team and playing by the time Penix plays. It really, really bothers me.
Borderline disrespectful.
And he's talking about the locker room. Justin, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I'm just thinking if you're Kirk Cousins and you're watching this draft, because he got the call while they were on the clock that this was happening. And you're like, okay, what weapon am I getting? Who's going to protect me? Yes. Who's going to be eating the opposing quarterback?
Right.
Oh, okay.
You wait, what know.
Now? Wait, what now?
You know.
You go, what now?
What is the area code in Atlanta? What? You know when that number popped up on his phone moments before they were on the clock or whatever. You know, he's like, oh, this is cool. Okay, they must be debating. You know, do they want to go offense, or are they going to go pass rusher? Or they want my 2 cents, right? They want my thought about this.
Right.
There is no way in the world he or his agent could have ever imagined.
Right.
You're doing what?
You can't possibly mean that. You can't possibly think that's what you're going to do,
am
right?
Am I getting punked right now? Like, I did the whole documentary with Omaha Productions. I had camera. I'm not seeing any cameras anywhere. Like, you're out of your skull right now. There's no way you're doing this.
I like the Peter Schrager sound. I don't know if you were planning on getting to it, but
let me play right now. Okay. I'll play it here. Here he is talking about what the Falcons think.
This ensures that no matter what happens, if it all goes well for both sides, they will not be in quarterback purgatory. They viewed Michael Penix as a top 10 prospect in this draft. They themselves do not see them being in the top 10 again now that they have Kirk Cousins. I think they were really scarred by the Desmond Ridder, Taylor Heineke, the Mariota, that they don't want to be in that place again.
I totally get it, but instead of quarterback purgatory, you're in quarterback gluttony.
Yeah, but the ending is the part that
got sorry. Me on this. Oh, I'm sorry. I cut it off. Let me play some more. I'm sorry.
And I'll say it. This is the same franchise that looked Bill Belichick in the eyes, had 2 interviews with him and said, nope, we're good. Like, they're beating to the beat of their own drummer right here. And in this case, they don't think it's crazy that they took Michael Penix. If anything, they think more teams should.
Yeah, I mean, if they're right on this, Salk, I mean, if they happen to be right on this, you know, we know how this league works too. They will say at the 8th pick overall, you know, this cap continues to grow, guys. This cap's at like $255 million, and we got this guy for 5 years. It whatever it's going to be, $30 million, you know, for Penix, or $28 million. Like, that's a steal. And, you know, if we'll do what, you know, Favre to Aaron Rodgers and some of these places had done in the past with having, you know, Montana to Young, like really talented, can't have enough talent in that room. And we make that transition in a couple of years. Kirk plays well and leads us to the playoffs. And all of a sudden, Penix is Mahomes and he takes us to Super Bowls. People will be emulating.
Yeah, that's
what
fine.
We did.
That could happen. Like, there is absolutely an upside possibility to it. But it sure feels like that is a sliver in terms of likelihood compared to the numerous ways this can go awry. Just not sure I understand it. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, you mentioned it earlier. As of today, you can sign free agents and it no longer impacts your comp pick situation, which is important because next year's a good draft, deep draft. Anyone still available that catches your eye?
Yeah, there are quite a few names, right? This is where you kind of get to that point where there are known names and known commodities. You're like, Hold on a second. That's a Pro Bowl player. I mean, that's a really good player.
Or who you got?
What about Justin Simmons at safety? Really, really smart player. Ball hawking player. Now, are you going to spend money at safety? Probably not. But there's good players on here. Quandre Diggs, does he want to come back to Seattle? You know, you didn't draft a safety, right? I don't think you signed a safety as an undrafted guy. Like, you obviously have your starters and a third guy that has played a little bit in the league. But, I mean, there's a couple really talented. Eddie Jackson, Terrell Edmonds. I mean, you got great safeties. You got three guards. You got Dalton Reisner. Van Roten's been in the building. Lewinsky. I mean, familiar names. Mm-hmm. So still some of these places, and I guess probably the one place I really do look at of still need is you got some inside linebackers that have played a lot of football. Quan Alexander, Shaquille Leonard, Zach Cunningham. Those guys have played a ton of ball over the years. You made your one-year signings. You know that it's going to be Baker, and you're going to go in that direction. With those guys, you know, I think right out front and a young fourth-rounder to run around. But based on OTAs, based on minicamp, based on market, based on if, you know, you are aggressive and moving maybe a Jaren Reed or something like that, and you free up some cap space, mm-hmm. would another linebacker be more valuable than a fourth defensive tackle? Possibly, but I'm kind of more in the vein of keep Jaren around and keep as many D linemen as possible and find people on the fringes. But there are a lot of quality names, and I was sitting there wondering, man, why aren't any of these guys signed? That's why.
Yeah.
Because today is the first time that they don't affect the compensatory picks, which matters, especially in next year's much deeper draft than this year's draft.
Any linebackers jump out to you there?
I mean, Quan Alexander back in his day could run and hit a little bit. I mean, you want guys in this system that could run. Cunningham's a little more beaten up and a bigger guy that comes downhill. So that's about it. Jamal Adams.
Question number two.
Jamal Adams.
Question number two.
The door is open for Jamal Adams. That report came out yesterday. The door is open for Rashad Penny. They don't close doors.
The door's large enough for Rashad to walk through. All right, question number two here, Brock. This draft class, I'm sure you've been looking at it not just through your own lens, but also through the whole statistical lens, yeah. Football focus, et cetera. What jumps out?
Well, I'll tip the cap to PFF Seahawks over there, my buddies, that put out three different numbers on three of the different draft picks. A.J. Barner, 36 missed tackles for since 2021. Only Brock Bowers with more. Mm. So to think that this guy is just a one-dimensional hand in the ground, he blocked at Michigan, not the case, man. As I said to you, when he was with Penix at Indiana, and I had him a bunch of times, he was absolutely their number one or two receiving option. Got a little wiggle to create some missed tackles. Our guy Nehemiah Pritchett, the corner, 12 catches allowed in 2023. Fewest among all SEC cornerbacks. Mm. So that's a pretty strong number two, along with a 40 time that was pretty outrageous. And then big old belly button guy, Christian Haynes, since 2022, 748 pass blocking snaps, 15 pressures, one sack allowed.
Wow.
When John Schneider said the other day at the presser, this guy's a pass blocker, man. He is really good at getting his body in front of people. He was a 5-flat 40 guy, not a 5-3 40 guy. He's got good enough feet. But super, super adept in a pretty average conference against not a ton of NFL dudes that he faced, but he dominated them. Just one sack allowed over those 3 years.
Interesting. All right, question number three. Stacey and I, by the way, were talking about your belly button comp. You said that it looks like Christian Haynes could foot a
right,
whole...
That, this is private.
No, you said...
That's private
no,
proprietary information.
You said cantaloupe. That's an exaggeration.
Yes.
Let's be clear. That's an exaggeration.
It's 100% exaggeration.
But
100%.
Lime?
It's a big belly button. Man.
Lime?
Plums?
Maybe a lime. Yeah, I think I could go lime. Not one of those super limes. Just a normal size.
Right.
Stick it in your Corona lime. Like
maybe
yeah.
a plum too. Yeah, maybe a plum.
I think you probably fit a lime in that. Cantaloupe is that's just wrong. You shouldn't even say things like that.
Total exaggeration.
That's an exaggeration. Cantaloupe is gigantic.
That was not nice. You showed that text to Stacey.
Citrus fruit?
That was not nice.
Citrus fruit? Yeah, I could see maybe a lime or a lemon or something along those lines. Brock, who is the Husky visitor who could be a bigger deal than either Pete or Bill?
Developers.
Are you going to make me play this?
Developers.
Are you saying that they need developers, Brock?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying Mr. Ballmer has gotten pretty hip in his 20 years. He's wearing some Lulu pants. He had some custom Clippers jacket on. He was looking leaner and meaner, and Mr. Ballmer around. I don't remember seeing Steve Ballmer. Damon, older brother, right? He escorts a lot of these bigwigs, a lot of donors, spends a lot of time with a lot of them. I don't remember him ever talking about Mr. Ballmer being around that facility.
Hardcore!
It's great to have Bill. It's great to have Pete. It's great to have all that wisdom. You know, it could be even greater in this day and age.
Money.
With lawlessness.
I love this money. Company. Yes!
If he could just slide in university and throw in, I don't know, $250 million. I don't know, $100 million, $10 million, $5 million. I don't know. But if you get Mr. Ballmer starting to commit to this program, in a day and age, Salk, you want a developer? Money, 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 money. Just hand it on over. Roll it on over. Fill up my collectives. Fill up my NIL.
Does that mean they can stop asking regular people to spend $25 to keep their program afloat?
I have four words for you. I love this
school
company. Yeah!
It's so much better with the I have four words for you. All right, that's ever. That's that is today's Blue 88.
That's a passionate man right there.
Yeah.
It's one passionate cookie.
Yep. Yeah. A Meyer lemon or perhaps Brock a navel orange.
Ooh.
Is that what would fit perfectly in there? A navel orange. It's pretty good. Pretty good. Funny. Thank you, 509. That one will work. That'll do for the day. That will do. All right. Let's see. Big baseball day. Jeff Passan going to join us coming up in about 30 minutes plus at 8:30. We'll talk about this historic run of this rotation and the fact that these Mariners just keep winning series four in a row now with an opportunity to win a fifth if they can beat Atlanta tonight or tomorrow afternoon. And that one would be pretty darn impressive. I mean, it's not like they're playing the Sisters of the Poor here. I know Colorado's not a good team, but to have beaten Texas and Arizona back to back, two teams that were in the World Series last year, and now back it up with Atlanta in next. That's some teams.
And you're telling me Fried is not their ace? That guy last night is not their ace?
I mean, he's good. He might technically be their one, but this Garcia dude is out of control. They got Chris Sale coming after that. Fortunately, Strider's hurt. So, yeah, I mean, Strider's their ace.
Lopez.
Yeah. What did I say, Garcia? I'm sorry. Yeah. It's Ronaldo Lopez, right?
Yes.
Is his name? I'm sorry. I said Garcia. Excuse me. They're good.
Yeah.
They're a really, really, really good baseball team. So we'll discuss with Jeff Passan coming up at 8:30. Before we get there, though, Brock, Stacy asked me a question, not about what kind of fruit would fit best inside somebody's belly button, but instead about Mike McDonald and the future of the Seahawks. I'll try to answer it with you next.
That was private.